song Poker.
What we've got here is failure to communicate. Some men you just can't reach. So you get what we had here last week, which is the way he wants it. Well, he gets it. And I don't like it any more than you men, but that's the song Poker way. And joining me fresh from the chain gang, it's old Red Eyes himself, Ian Martin. I'm James, and you are in for a darn good hour or so of song poking, so strap in, hold up, cut loose, and wet your pants in anticipation of what's in store. Hi, Ian. How are you?
Hi, James. I'm really well. I was really enjoying you sort of doing a one-man version of Civil War, but then you stopped doing that and you introduced this instead, but I still want to hear the rest of Civil War.
Oh, no, I was just doing Cool Hand Luke.
Well, we'll take that disappointment and let's maybe bring it into the centre and then sort of expand it and give it out to all of our listeners through the medium of making an episode of Song Poker that they'll be subjected to. And that way everyone can feel that kind of inner, I suppose, emptiness that I feel right now.
There's nothing I like more than to sort of share my disappointment with a wider audience.
Yeah. But before we start disappointing people, I'm just going to upset you with a quick round of song or wrong.
Okay.
Okay, so we've got the usual thing here. There's three songs, three acts. One of them is a complete fiction. The other two are sadly genuine.
Excellent.
Okay, right. Here's your first song. It's called Kim Philby by Dreadnought. Song number two is called Party Socks. Now, that's by Umlaut. And your third option is called Pimlico by Keith Burton's Beef Curtains.
Shit. Oh, come on. I mean, there cannot simply be a Keith Burton's Beef Curtains album or a band. What on earth? Dreadnought sounds like it's an actual band. Kim Philby. Didn't I get Kim Philby confused with Kim Riley, who used to
the local
present Nationwide or something, or like Look East? He had terrible partridge hair.
Yeah, he had the worst hair and the worst manner of any broadcast journalist that I've ever watched. Sorry if you're listening. He's almost certainly not. I think he's dead.
So, Dreadnought and Kim Philby, one of the Cambridge spies, was he?
That sounds
plausible. The Keith Burton's Beef Curtains does not sound plausible.
It sounds like a cartoon strip from Viz, doesn't it?
It does. Mm. Which makes me think, is that the one? And is Umlaut, again, the... So Ludicrous is the third one's name that I just have to call that out as bullshit.
You're choosing to believe that there is no such band as Keith Burton's Beef Curtains.
I am.
You are correct.
Oh, well, thank
well
God.
Done. But I could tell you were agonising over that.
Yeah.
There'll be more of that next time, and one day, by God, I will fool you with... judicious use of umlauts, but we should digress no longer. We're here for one reason and one reason only. What I thought we'd do is we'd resurrect an old television format and give it a spin, try it out for ourselves. I was thinking of Jukebox Jury, which was originally an American show, which was broadcast in the UK between something like, I don't know, it was 50s and 60s with a sort of short-lived and doomed and appalling revival in 89 and 90, featuring Jules Holland. And you'd get a bunch of people who would come in, sit around in the studio. They were probably quite drunk, you know, having a bit of a laugh. They'd play a few records. They'd give their instant hot takes to those records, and that was the show. And I thought, well, if they can get away with that, we can have a go at doing that ourselves.
I'd like that. I saw an episode recently on YouTube that had George Michael together with Morrissey on the sofa.
Good gravy.
Yeah.
Would that be from Jules Holland's doomed revival?
No, it was earlier than that, actually.
Oh.
They were both very, very young.
Wow.
Morrissey was unsurprisingly less than charitable. George, unsurprisingly, a gentleman.
I think both of those attitudes kind of typify them as not just as artists, but as human beings.
How can we emulate their success?
Well, so I thought what we could do to sort of blast us into that kind of George Michael Morrissey ionosphere of talent is listen to some recent single releases and sort of, you know, witlessly sort of drivel on about them for no more than a couple of minutes each, just to show how hip and modern and with it we are.
Okay, yo, Mr. DJ, what are you spinning first?
Well, Daddy-O, the first song for our consideration is the new single from the popular band Elbow, which is called Lover's Leap.
Take me up to Lover's Leap. Throw my body off the
So, do you have any relationship with Elbow? Do you have any reaction to them? Are you a fan? Are you a loather of Elbow?
I'm certainly not a loather or a lover. I quite enjoy whenever I hear them. I quite enjoy them. I've never bought an Elbow record. I quite enjoy Guy Garvey on the radio, because he, you know, sometimes has his own show and he seems to be a man of discerning taste. And I quite like this song. Again, I wouldn't buy it, but I do enjoy it. And it had quite a good video as well.
Yeah, good. I'm glad. I think for me, Elbow, and this is in the history of music journalism, this is going to come as a bit of a left field kind of sentence, but they remind me of Salman Rushdie.
Oh.
In that they sort of flit between, if you equate albums with novels, good one, bad one, good one, bad one. So Salman Rushdie, every other book is brilliant. Every other book is... And I feel it's the same with Elbow ever since the... what was the one that won all the awards?
The Seldom Seen Kid?
Yes. Since The Seldom Seen Kid, they sort of... A couple of times they've produced another album as good as that. The rest of the time, I'm not going to go so far as to say it flirts with self-parody, but there is a certain theme that they fall back on, I think, when they're at their perhaps less inspired. And this one, for me, kind of feels like one of those. It's got that traditional warmth and cheekiness and artsy kind of chilled vibe. But on the whole, I don't think it's doing anything new.
Okay, so this new single, it's actually, I mean, we're talking about these new singles, but I suspect a few of them are new for this calendar year, but they're not this week's release by any means, because I think Lover's Leap was from January, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, yes, but you know, who else of our age would have even known it had come out?
Exactly. So, Lover's Leap, the first single taken from a 10th studio album, Audio Vertigo, it's called.
Oh dear! What a terrible title.
Slated for release around this time, exactly. In fact,
right.
Yeah. So, will this be a good Elbow album or a less inspired album?
Well, I think we're due for a brilliant one.
Okay.
So watch this space and we'll let you know.
Excellent. All right, let's move on and let's queue up the next disc.
What's the next disc that we're queuing up?
Well, let's talk about the massive single by a little known act called Beyoncé.
This ain't Texas, ain't no hold'em, so lay your cards down, 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 down. So park your Lexus and throw your keys up, stick around, round, 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 round.
Texas Hold'em. Now, if you haven't heard the whole song, you've surely heard snippets all over socials.
Have you seen any of the video?
I have, yeah.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It's arresting.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, for that alone, it's a hit for me.
Yes, it is.
It's interesting that everyone seems to be skewing country this year, the genre du jour. Lana Del Rey is working on an album for later in the year, which she says is her country record. It's obviously just something that people do every once in a while. Everyone goes country. Reminded of, quite credible bands going country back in the day and it not necessarily working. But for me, this worked bloody well.
Yeah, I think it's also ignited an interesting conversation regarding, you know, black culture and country music and the black roots of country music as well. Fashion also, you know, the iconography of that seems to be on the table again.
Yeah, there's a lot going on with it, like everything that she turns her hand to.
Yes.
And also I think because she incorporates the country sound without in any way affecting what she does sort of vocally, lyrically, she's still very much herself, and that makes it stronger for me.
She's too much of a class act, I guess, to be lured into that sort of thing. It sounds authentic to me anyway.
Yeah.
So is this a hit or a miss?
I think for me it's a definite hit. I mean, it's on my running playlist.
Yeah.
And if I ever go running again, it'll be really good.
Yeah, I mean, with or without our blessing, to be honest, this is a huge hit, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think it's one of her biggest hits as well.
Yeah, I mean, no one gives a flying ribbon about what we say, but the fact that we enjoy it just makes us look slightly less moribund, shall we say.
I've been cultivating this moribundness for years.
Well, so we love Beyoncé. Let's have a listen to song number three, Change, by Kate Nash.
Someone said it's never too late to begin being the things you're afraid you aren't. Hot coffee on the stove left a little too long and I burned the beans, but I don't have time to make a new one, so I'll take it.
I'm really fascinated by her sort of story, really. I mean, obviously, you know, she had a big label signed her for her first album. And then she was dropped after the second album, which nobody listened to or noticed. And for about 10 years now, she's been plugging away, sort of working for herself. She had all her money stolen by her manager about 5 or 6 years ago. But she persists. And I think it's very interesting that she's been so driven to keep going when a lot of other people who'd starred in something like Glee would have just thought, do you know what, I'll just be a full-time actor. I was interested to hear it, and this is her first record now with a new label, and it's a very elbow kind of song is what I'm gonna say. The first, you know, 2 minutes and 59 are, you know, you can tell she's just starred in a film about a girl who makes coffee for a living, because there's a lot of lyrics about making coffee. But then suddenly right at the end it just goes up into the stratosphere and becomes this really anthemic thing, which she's not really tried before, and it's just a very different sort of song for her, and it does sound like something that someone else should be doing.
That whole singing in a Cockney accent, how do you feel about that? Where do you stand on it? For me, you know, because is that authentic? I mean, I guess it is for her.
I wouldn't assume she's necessarily a Cockney. I don't know.
I think she
if
is.
If anything, I'm going to guess she's West London, just to make a conversation point of it. But you frantically Google it, and then we'll have a definitive answer.
Yeah.
We need clarity.
Okay. So yeah. So Kate's not born within the sound of Bow Bells. She is West London. She's Harrow. That singing in a Cockney accent reminds me of sort of 20 years ago, perhaps, when Lily Allen and it was breaking through as well. You know, so much so actually that we didn't talk about this when we were doing the episode on the new Rolling Stones album, but you know the song The Whole Wide World on the Hackney Diamonds album.
Yeah.
Mix inexplicably. He's like
singing in a Cockney accent. He's never done that. You know, even when he was 20 years old and in his early career, and suddenly he starts singing like a little city gent.
A little Cockney. Well, you're forgetting the classic song Core Bleeding Blimey Governor Have a Cup of Tea from their 1978 album Horse Biscuits. That was a weird moment. And maybe that's what Kate was tapping into when she recorded this. I'm curious, though. It's not your cup of tea, I'm assuming, but are you going to sign off on it, or are you consigning it to the fiery bowels of hell?
Oh, no, I wouldn't dream of doing that. I think it's all right.
Lovely. Yeah. Right, so we'll call that a modest hit. What's up next, DJ?
Okay, next, it's Pharrell Williams featuring the ever-so-good Miley Cyrus, and this is a song called Doctor.
So it's a shame being called Doctor that it's not about Doctor Who. Pharrell and Miley, I can see them sitting there in the studio, right? It's half 10 at night, it's late, they've both got deadlines, sure. There's a bit of a frazzled atmosphere, they've got to finish this song. But she's like, oh yeah, but though, no, because they're repeating an old Peter Capaldi episode of Doctor Who, let's just watch that. And I imagine they discover a mutual love of the show that would then sort of suffuse their work together with that spirit of unabashed joy.
Yeah, I can't imagine that happened, but I mean, she does look like something from sci-fi, probably more like Barbarella in the video. Have you seen that? She has magnificent sort of plumage,
huge hair.
It's wonderful. It's a very Pharrell production, isn't it, as well?
It really is.
Sounds a bit like Blurred Lines to me.
I mean, it does. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of his work.
Right.
A lot of it does sound the same. But to me, in my silly little ears, this is just another Miley song.
Yeah, it made me laugh when I was watching the video and I casually scrolled down to the comment section and I saw that someone had written, "Serious fan here, I've supported her since her inception."
Wow.
I thought, blimey.
That's... So he's at the edge of the bed going, go on, Billy, fire them, Billy.
That's
make
keen
Miley
support.
Happen. Make Miley happen. Impregnate the mother load.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, like most bands and musicians, I don't get into them until at least like the second or third single, but to literally
to
be
there
live at the
yeah,
moment.
From the inception. It's extraordinary.
I'm not going to call the man a liar. If it was a man, it might have been a woman. I don't know. I'm not going to call them a liar because people on social media are vindictive and psychotic.
Especially Miley Cyrus fans.
Especially Miley Cyrus fans. But I don't believe that. But do you like this song?
I've preferred her last few singles.
Yes. I mean, the ones that she actually did on her own that are brilliant, as opposed to this, which is, you know, I'm gonna lay down some vocals for my mate Pharrell,
but I won't knock her. I mean, she has her knockers, but I won't knock her.
Yeah, I think for me this is very disposable, and you'd enjoy it if it was on a night out, but it's not something you'd seek out to own or, you know, listen to as you unload the dishwasher.
So in that regard, are we saying a modest hit?
Sure.
What's next?
Well, next we have a bald man dressed in black.
Yul Brynner?
Is the latest single from the prolific artist Billy Joel. Oh. turn the lights back on.
Ah. Oh.
So this is then his first new song in 31 years.
That is amazing, isn't it? For someone that was pretty prolific through a good couple of decades, for then not to hear from him with any new music. I mean, I know he's been touring tirelessly, yeah, ceaselessly almost for 30 years, but to not have that, to not have the music in him, if you pardon the expression, for 30 years is interesting. And to be so open about it. And then to come back with that, what I think is actually quite a good song.
You've always got to be careful, because there's this sense with Billy Joel that even though he's done some undeniably great songs, there is this sense that really you're not supposed to like him, though, really, are you?
Well, he's not. He's certainly not cool, no.
He's not cool. He's kind of the musical equivalent of Lenny Bennett.
Mmm. For our American listeners. But has the pendulum swung so far now that he is now cool?
I suppose he's cool purely because he's still going. And as increasingly few people from that era are still making new music, and this is one song in 31 years, we're not going to pretend he's making new music. This was kind of teased out of him by a music producer who really wanted to work with him and produce something new, but I don't think it's going to lead to an album. What I felt about it when I first heard it was, oh God, is this Billy Joel's Black Star?
Oh, right, yeah, that was where you went.
Is this his way of saying goodbye?
Mm.
And if so, it's a very confusing message, because what he's saying, if it is, hello, I'm back, it's been 31 years, but here we go again. Bye! Which, you know, that's not the way one would probably want to say goodbye musically. So I'm assuming it's just a one-off, writing a song for the sake of doing it as an experiment. And I absolutely love this song.
Do you? Oh, good.
The more I hear it, the more it grows on me. And
it's grown on me as well. I was a little iffy at first. He should be commended perhaps as well for just not putting out any old rubbish in the last 30 years as well.
Well, exactly. How many artists do we sort of mock because they keep putting out the same duff record every 2 years, John Bon Jovi? Although John Bon Jovi obviously not recording anymore because he had that operation. So, yes, I think...
And have you seen the video?
I have, and I think the video is the most amazing thing I've seen since The Irishman.
It's magnificent, isn't it?
It really is. It's and light years ahead of the technology, even in that film, which was, what, 3 years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. Four. Yeah.
So Joel sort of appears through the miracle of CGI at various points in his career, singing this brand new song. And they've even taken the trouble to do that thing of incorporating live footage where his mouth exactly matches what it would be doing if he was singing that song. So much care in this video, and so much genius and art. I just think it's bloody amazing.
Yeah, it's really lovely. Excellent.
So we're gonna say hit or miss.
Massive miss. No, it's a big thumbs up from Christine Brinkley. No, it's no, it's very much a hit for me.
Mm. Fantastic. That's all I wanted to know.
Mm.
Turning aside from Billy Joel, the next single to play is Dark Matter by Pearl Jam.
Excellent. You're a long-time jammer, aren't you?
Well, I'm going to qualify that. So I got into their first album as it was coming out. Well, you know, I remember hearing Alive when it first appeared on the chart show, and I taped it off the chart show. Loved Pearl Jam's first album. Didn't then listen to anything else they did for about 20 years.
Oh.
For no real reason. And then in about 2010 or 2011... I just started listening to their entire back catalogue, which by then was quite considerable. And I discovered that there was actually quite a lot of variety and skill and innovation and really good music in amongst their career.
Mm.
And then sadly, their last three albums, I would say, have been visited by the Dark Lord of uninspired music.
Mm. Okay.
So I've listened to this song about five or six times.
Yes.
And I couldn't tell you the tune. I couldn't tell you how the chorus goes. I couldn't tell you what the lyrics are about. It's got some drums. It's got some rock guitar. And it's got Eddie Vedder's big boy voice. And he's upset about something. And that's literally all I've gleaned from it.
Pearl Jam for me, beyond that 10 album. I mean, I'm aware of Eddie Vedder when he crops up on stage singing other people's songs or joining other people as guest vocalist. And yep. Oh my God, does he do that quite a lot. But he's a handsome man.
He's got a lovely voice.
And so, lovely hair still.
Yeah, very good head of hair. For someone who smokes that much dope, to have that much hair, there's no justice.
So what are we giving Pearl Jam's latest offering?
Well, I think for me, it belongs very much in the same, I'm going to use the word bin, as their last album, Dance of the Clairvoyants.
That was their last, dreadful.
That was their album that unfortunately came out right at the start of COVID, so they couldn't tour it. So it just kind of sat there like an unwanted duckling.
Oh, God.
I think the last good song they did was Sirens in about 2014. So, for me, with the greatest of Pearl Jam love, this is a definite miss.
Yeah, okay. And I'll do the same. Good. Just to show solidarity.
Good. Well, let's finish on a high. We've both reacted a little bit mutedly to Pearl Jam, but the final single is something that I think we'll both enjoy, and maybe it'll get us up and dancing. It's a little song called Almost Like Being in Love by Rodney Stewart and Jules Holland.
What a day this has been. What a rare mood I'm in. Why, it's almost like being in love. There's a smile on my face for the whole human race. Why, it's almost like being in love. All the music of life seems to be, like a bell that is ringing for me.
Fuck me, I mean, this...
Fucking hell.
Jesus Christ.
This is monstrous, isn't
this
it?
This is... this is fucking abysmal.
The teetering weight of misguided arrogance and cocaine that has led to this abomination, if I may use that word.
I hate this so much.
I...
Well, look, I mean, this is written by the great Lerner and Lowe, isn't it?
It's Arthur Lowe.
Yeah, it's
Stripper Boy.
It was from the musical Brigadoon. Mm-hmm. You know, it's been around and sung by countless people, but it comes a point in a showman's career where the well has dried up and they go to the Great American Songbook and peddle that shit out just to pay the next tax bill.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't know, he obviously went to Jules and his swing band for some sort of extra credibility or extra sales push for Christmas. And
or just to be seen to be doing something different.
But this is what Rod's been doing for... So I love Rod. I do love Rod Stewart. I love 70s Rod and I love 80s Rod. Not so much 90s Rod or anything beyond. He had a great voice. He can't really do that anymore. He's dropped the songs that he performs live now down the octave just to manage them. But this collaboration, I think, is less decent than fucking prostate cancer.
Would you use the word misbegotten?
I would.
So what is it about Jules Holland that detracts from what is already quite a poor experience.
Well, I can't bear retro swing music anyway. No. I can just about put up with swing music if it was recorded, you know, the big band stuff back 80 years ago.
Yeah.
But I cannot abide new versions of it. I mean, I do not want to hear this song again. I would suggest that if you play this song backwards, it would probably try to convince the audience to commit atrocities.
So I was thinking about this. I was thinking how bad could things get before I'd voluntarily listen to this song again. I would rather have an operation that left me with the genitals of a field mouse.
What, than listen to this song?
Then listen to this song again.
I'd rather see my kids given over to a life of indentured servitude at the hands of an East London human trafficking ring than suffer the miserable indignity of this song.
I would go to Glasgow rather than listen to this song.
Christ. I'd rather place my left bollock in the gear system of an Austin Allegro and then box it heavily on the M6 at 40 miles an hour rather than having that dog shit invade my consciousness for 1 second more.
I would rather listen to all of Joe Rogan's podcasts than listen to this song once.
I fervently wish that I could go back in time to my own past and convince my mother to abort me rather than risk the hideous chance of having that song assault me in my future.
I would go back to the moment of Jules Holland's inception and I would stand at the foot of the bed and I would bellow, "Don't come, don't do it, don't fire
do
me,
it.
Don't do it." Tax, numbers, anything I could say to distract them and ruin the moment.
But then we wouldn't have Squeeze.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
Or Jules Holland's Hootenanny.
Yeah, I'd be fine with that.
Later with Jules Holland.
It's not later enough, though, is it? It's never later enough.
I saw him last year at a classic car meet. He's got a rather exceptional American, like large American car from the 40s, which he likes to show off. And I enjoyed seeing it, so, you know.
I can beat that. We bought a RAV4 yesterday.
Wow, a Toyota RAV4. What year?
Yeah. 21.
Oh, it's a new one.
Yeah.
Practically brand new.
30,000 miles, yeah. No, it is.
Oh, that will last year. Well done.
Well, that's the plan.
So, sorry, going back to Rod and Jules.
Rod and Jules, yeah. I would rather blast my scrotum into the orbiting mass of a dwarf star for it to fall through a singularity, travel back to the moment of the universe's creation and explode backwards in time so that everything in the universe was covered in jizz, rather than listen to this horrible, horrible record.
So, just to clarify, are we saying it's a hit or a miss?
Oh, I think it's a hit.
Yeah, me too. Massive hit.
Huge hit. Be very big with the kids.
Yeah.
If you're buying Beyonce and you've got the money for another single this week, make it Rod.
It feels like after we've ragged on those two fools.
Well, it's only really one fool. I think with Stuart, we can put it down to either senility or the hectoring of his brother Jackie. But I don't blame Rod. I think Rod's misguided. I think he's foolish.
I think there's much to blame Rod for.
Do you think?
Oh, good God!
Not in terms of this song. I think he's just he's turned up. He doesn't really know what's going on. Someone's given him a sheet of lyrics and said, "Here, Rod, sing this. I'll play on the piano." And unfortunately, it was Jules Holland.
Well, look, I don't know who to blame for this, but it's an aberration. And I mean, really, it should go into our next section, avoiding the VOM, but it won't. It can't. We've discussed it already and we've ragged on it, but...
Yes.
Yeah. But shall we play a game avoiding the VOM, or do you think it's going to be too negative for our audience?
No, I think we've given them a bunch of songs that we love. I think we've given them one song that we didn't really like very much at all. And we're finishing on a comedy tangent, which I don't think will affect the overall vibe of the show over much. Let's play Voiding the VOM.
Voiding the VOM. All right.
That's very Freddy. I like what you did there. So, your turn this episode. I'm waiting for you to present me with two beautiful musical objets for us to discuss, kick about, poke around, and ultimately frisbee one of them over a rainbow.
Excellent. Well, today's choices... are from two artists that I actually have an awful lot of time for. I enjoy them very much, in fact. So it kind of saddens me that they've produced these awful offerings. First up is a little number by the great Tina Turner.
Oh, Tina Turner.
Can you guess what Tina Turner offering I have?
I know what song of hers I would pick.
Right, but, which is what?
Which is Simply the Best.
Ah, Simply the Best. I mean, my God, I wish I'd written that song. I mean...
Yes, but I wish I hadn't seen my aunties dancing to it throughout the 80s with such hideous joie de vivre.
Did your aunties perhaps dance to the song Nutbush City Limits? Because I've always detested this song.
Oh, God, I can't even remember Nutbush City Limits.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they did. I think anything Tina did before about 1983 was lost on my aunties and many of the aunties of Colchester.
So I think this is a 73 hit with Ike, originally with Ike. And I can't quite put my finger on why I find this so repulsive. I mean, it's got Tina, it's got Ike, it's got a Moog in it, it's got... brass funk, some great musicians apparently played on it. She re-recorded it a couple of times, actually, once in the 90s, I think, and it just sounds even bloody worse. I just can't bear the track.
Okay, so it's got everything going for it in terms of instrumentation and the creative force behind it.
Yeah.
It's got an inoffensive lyric that hasn't in any way, offended you.
So it's inexplicable.
On it, what is it about it?
It's inexplicable.
Like? Is it the tune? Is it the production? Is it?
Yeah, it's everything. It just doesn't work for me.
Well, my ghast is flabbered.
Mm.
Okay. Well, what's your alternate choice? What's your backup? What's your number two?
Well, okay. The next track, similar in a sense, because it's another song devoted to a place. It's U2 and Atomic City.
Oh, now I'm very glad that we get to discuss this. Obviously, on an episode about sort of current-ish singles, this only came out in what, November, December,
something like that. Yeah, I think when a band's number's up,
yeah,
and I think perhaps you two know it, but would never, ever, ever admit it.
Mm.
You know, that well is dry and. Yeah, there's not a great deal of fecundity there, is there now?
There's no, I would say there's almost no fecundity whatsoever.
Yeah, you know, writing about a place is a pretty easy, lazy deal, especially somewhere like Las Vegas, where so much has been written about it, it's been eulogised, it's been demonised countless times before anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I think this is a brazen, cynical, empty tie-in to their live residency, and I hate
I hate the
production. I mean, you know, for a while their production was groundbreaking, you know, under Eno and Lanois, you know, but now just the guitar sounds are dull. He's been doing the same guitar. The bass line is pretty good, I think, but
sure
and yes, the song is is designed to fill that stadium, to fill that space, to be experienced live. But in a way, that in itself is so damn depressing. You know, yeah. they can do those soaring chords till the cows come home, but it's so surface level, masquerading as this ironic, knowing comment about the nature of Vegas.
Yeah.
But it doesn't need to be made again. That doesn't, you know.
The nature of Vegas that they have dropped their collective trousers for and bent over.
Yeah.
And said, give us your millions. We will absolutely come and spend 3 months in a big golf ball in the middle of the desert doing little dances.
Yeah. I mean, they're not playing the ballroom at Caesar's Palace. And I don't get me wrong. I think that you two are still a commercial force to be reckoned with, you know. And I'm sure that live experience that
was amazing.
Sure. You know, it was augmented by all of those fantastic designs, the visuals.
Yeah.
That was genuinely groundbreaking stuff, or rather the tech itself is groundbreaking work.
Yeah.
But I think as a new work, as a song in and of itself, this really sucks. And it's a rip-off of a Blondie song, which is much better in the first place. So,
well, I've got to tell you right now, it's not even my favourite song that's called Atomic City. So the first track on Holly Johnson's Blast from 1988 was called Atomic City. And that was much better. That was much better. There's a party going on, he begins, in Atomic City. Some are drunk and some are sitting pretty.
Wow. Would that have been the same...
Compared with this.
Yeah. Would that have been the same album that as Blue Jeans and Chinos, Americanos?
Yeah. Americanos, yeah.
And Love Train, or was that later?
Love Train, yep. Yeah, oh, okay. No. Mm. I think he only had one album, or certainly only one album that anyone ever listened to.
Mm.
But that album was better than this song, and it will surprise you not one iota when I tell you that the song I'm choosing to blast into space forever and delete from our earthly existence is Atomic City by U2.
Mm. It saddens me because, as you know, I'm a U2. Oh, I'm just going to pop little Bono into the rocket there.
Feed him in through the little window.
Yeah, and there we go. Oh, he likes that. He's got his sunglasses on.
Oh, bless him.
Just to protect him from the blast.
Give him a little scritch under his chin. He likes that.
Ah, there you go. Right, step back as launch pad is a go.
Yep, I'm gonna pull the lever. Stand back, everyone.
I think, you know, this is not going to stop us. Oh, off
Voiding
we go, boys.
The bomb.
10, 9, ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff.
This is not going to stop us, of course, discussing U2's better work at some point later on. The good stuff later on. But I think I'd just like to acknowledge, as a U2 fan, that I think this song is bullshit.
Well, it's bullshit in space now, which is what it says on J.J. Abrams' business card these days. So fantastic. We've thoroughly ripped off Jukebox Jury. I actually found it quite difficult just jabbering on about new songs that I've not had sort of 10 years of emotional attachment to. Who gives a shit?
At least we're not charged with the idea of having some sort of real influence in its commercial success.
This is true. We're not gatekeepers.
No.
We're keymasters.
Yes. Back in the day, those guys, whoever was on the panel, probably could have
break any young pop stars. I'm thinking probably Blackburn was on there, probably Savile,
Mike Reed.
None of them are people that we want to associate ourselves with, but
and yet we have
not. Yeah, but definitely not Mike Reed.
God no. Savile I can live with, but yeah, if sure. any fucker compares yeah. me with Mike Reed, there'll
that's,
be...
That's game over.
There will so, be blood.
So we've done that. That was wonderful. I enjoyed that very much. All of these people will be releasing full albums at some point this year, so that's another 7 episodes of content.
But until next time, when who knows what we'll be discussing, I think it's prudent to say our farewells, Ian. Would you like to say the first farewell?
I will say only this. Cheery bam.
And I shall bid thee a fond farewell with a toodle pipsky.
Song Poker was produced by Electric Sodcast Studios.
It's almost like me.